food is fuel and you can use it as a tool. So I always recommend starting with that first before doing anything else.
Are you raising your family while also feeling like you're still growing up yourself? Do you wonder if you are getting it right? Or do you ask, where's the roadmap to building a happy, healthy life? Welcome to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. She's a pediatrician and a mom, and she helps the whole family.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sarah Adams, a board-certified pediatrician, but I'm not your pediatrician. Feel free to use my podcast as helpful information, but in no way do I intend my podcast to replace the advice of your physician. Your physician knows you and is in the best position to provide medical advice. Welcome back to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. Today we're diving into a topic that so many parents of active kids and teens ask me about. How do we fuel our young athletes? Whether your child is doing daily dance classes, long soccer practices, or weekend swim meets, what they eat and drink can have a big impact on their performance, their growth, and their long-term health. Joining me is Mara Fowler, a registered dietitian and public health expert who specializes in pediatric dance and sports nutrition. She's here to break down the basics and to talk about when a child's participation in sports might be impacting their health. Mara, welcome. I'm so glad you're here.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I can't wait to share all the wonderful information that I have for this topic.
I'm so glad to have you here because this is such a common topic that comes up in my clinic with my families. One of the first questions I like to ask my guests are, what are some of the most common questions or concerns parents bring to you about children's nutrition?
I think the biggest questions that I normally get is about making sure that they are eating a balanced diet and how that works. And especially with sport nutrition, the additional nuances that they have, they want to know how to fuel their kids. So they're always asking about the food before and after practice, or water intake is a big one. And I have a wide range of clients that they're either trying to gain weight or lose weight. So it really depends on the individual sometimes with the other smaller nuances in it.
Well, let's start and talk about energy. Carbohydrates are often misunderstood. Can you explain why they're so essential in kids that are in sports, and what kind of carbs are best before and after practice or competitions?
Yeah, this is a huge question. I think they are misunderstood. Carbs are great. They're good. They're good for your brain. And most importantly, they're really good for a kid who is doing sports. I always say if your child is active, or any child for that matter, you should start off with a fiber source. That's going to be energy that's going to last you the whole day. But when it comes to sports in particularly, it is okay to allow your child to have some simple carbs. And that can simply look like fruit or pretzels, Cheez-Its, things like that right before a practice, because not only does it have those simple carbs that they can use that energy right away, it also has a little salt on it, which is all contributes to electrolytes as well.
I have to tell you, both my boys played football when they were in high school, and we used to do Thursday night pasta dinner. Is that still a right thing to do before a big competition or a game?
Yeah, this is still commonly practiced, is having a larger carb meal before, especially a really big game or performance, whatever it may be. That energy is going to be used, and a lot of times they're really, really pushing it. They want to perform their best. They want all the energy. So it's still something that I would definitely recommend. Yeah.
And what about snacks? Like, are there certain snacks that are simple or meal ideas that you love that really give kids energy, like you mentioned, that they need when there's a time crunch? Because we know kids and parents are so overscheduled.
Mm-hmm. So I always love whenever parents take time to make snacks at the beginning of the week, especially when they have busy practices, even like before a big game or something along those lines. And That could include like crackers with cheese or fruit with nuts. You can create your own energy balls. There's a lot of amazing recipes that could include like figs inside of it and a lot of fiber that's really good, like I talked about, that can be long-lasting energy. The first snack should be the higher fiber snack, and then later on in the day, it should definitely be that more simple carbohydrate.
It sounds like what you're saying is a combination of carbs and protein together, which is something I often recommend in my practice. So I'm glad I'm doing that right.
Yeah. The carbs and the protein go together so well, and I definitely recommend it. This is your snack that you have after your rehearsal or your practice or your game. And this is mainly because of muscle recovery and the protein synthesis. You want to rebuild it. You want to build more. And the carbohydrate, there's some research out there that actually shows that the combination of a carb and protein does help with that recovery and building process as well.
That sounds like such a great idea. What I think would be helpful is maybe pre-mixing some of those things in a snack bag or something like that and keeping it in the car. So when you're picking them up, that sounds like a really good snack to have after dance, after practice, after a big game, until you can get home and have a full meal.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think having it ready to go as soon as they're done is great. There's always misleading research on how soon you should have that protein snack. It can be, you'll find research that's anywhere between 30 minutes to 4 hours, or it doesn't matter. But I always like to give like a little range of 30 minutes to 2 hours is like kind of like the medium for me. So that's usually what I recommend. But having a snack ready, I have parents who'll make a smoothie, a protein smoothie that's ready for them as soon as they get home. Those are all really great options for sure.
If you liked today's episode so far and it hits close to home for you, please like and subscribe to the podcast. It just takes one click. And please share it with other parents. And if you have topics you'd like for me to discuss here on Growing Up with Dr. Sarah, reach out to us. Leave us a voice message. Instructions are in the description box below. Stick around. We have more on fueling your young athletes. Well, I appreciate you clarifying that for everybody that's listening. Let's switch gears to hydration and electrolytes. We know that hydration is another big area of confusion. How much water should kids be drinking, again, before, during, and after practices, games, for example?
Yeah, so this is a really common question amongst my families. It's often really confusing and it can sometimes be overwhelming. It can look like a lot of fluids. The first thing I always say is that you have to make sure that you know your child's individualized goal. So it's always important, especially if your kid is involved with sports, to know what that is. Work with a dietitian to find out what that number looks like, because we want to do that type of hydration first before we add on for the sport that they're doing. Now you have to consider the sport. So if they're having long practices, long rehearsals, they're definitely going to need more. And sometimes I even recommend my parents to weigh their child before and after, because every single pound that they lose after, which is fluid loss, they need to add about 8 to 16 ounces of water for each pound that's been lost.
What great advice. So first, you want to know how much water do they actually need in a 24-hour period based on their age and stage of development. And then also, depending on their sport, they may need more or less water afterwards, depending on how much water loss they actually exhibit. And one way to measure that is by weighing them before and after their sports or their practices. Well, when, if ever, do they actually need sport drinks or extra electrolytes? And when is just plain water enough?
Yeah, so this topic can be controversial sometimes. There's a lot of brands out there that like to push their electrolyte drinks, and we think we need them. And in reality, most of our diets, we already get enough sodium in it, especially here in America. So we don't have to have electrolyte drinks all the time. But if you are an athlete, mm-hmm. you are part of a special group, a special consideration. So I always tell my parents, if your child is more than 45 minutes being active, they should consider having a sport drink, especially if they are a heavy sweater, if it's hot and humid outside, and if it's a really long practice.
And what do you think about energy drinks, coffee or caffeine, which are so prevalent and marketed to young people?
Yeah, I don't ever recommend an energy drink to my children. I think we can hold that off until their later years, you know, if they plan to play more professionally. But caffeine can help in some instances. But at the end of the day, you want to be fueling yourself with the correct food, carbohydrates, protein, the fats, all the good stuff there.
I'm really glad to hear you say that because I would agree. Now, what about protein for growing muscles? Protein often gets a lot of hype, and you mentioned it earlier in our conversation. How much protein do growing athletes really need? And what are some practical, kid-friendly ways to add more protein to their day?
Yeah, so protein is definitely essential, especially if you are an athlete. I think it also depends on what level of activity your child is doing. Protein, once again, is a very individualized goal. It's really important to, once again, talk to a dietitian or a pediatrician or someone that can help kind of break that down for you, so you can really know what they have. Because once you know that baseline goal, just like with the hydration, then you're probably going to add a little bit more on top of that for the sport itself. I will sometimes have to times it by, our numbers are like 1.2, 1.5, in order to get the exact number that can help building, doing the muscle protein synthesis in your body. So as far as snacks that are kid friendly, I will often recommend snacks that aren't necessarily like meat based. Cheese has protein in it. Greek yogurt has protein in it. Even like having some nuts will be a great option. It has the healthy fats, which could also be good for inflammation purposes. So those are good alternatives than just having like a piece of chicken really quickly, because nobody really wants that after a workout, right? And then having even like a sandwich might be okay.
That's very important to know, because it is developmentally, it can be harmful for their kidneys and not so much for their growth, but the way that they digest it and process it. But as kids get older, they can process those proteins. And that brings me to another question, because I've had endless conversations about creatine. Creatine is made up of 3 amino acids, and it's found in your muscle and your brain, just to let our audience know. I usually advise against it for young people because few studies have really been examined about the long-term safety and effects of creatine. And we still don't really know enough about its effect on growth, anxiety, that the way it changes how our muscles look, especially after you stop taking it. Mm-hmm. And there are potential risks to the kidneys, especially with dehydration. What do you hear from parents and young athletes who want to use it?
I would actually tell them not to proceed with it, just because when there is a lack of research, I don't like to kind of give in to supplements as a source of that building. I think, once again, kind of going back to like the caffeine, like we want to get energy. We want to build as naturally as possible, especially when they're still developing. It can be later in their years if they want to try it, but right now it wouldn't be their time.
So using food as your fuel, as your energy, as your muscle building versus actually using a supplement like that is what I hear you recommending.
Oh, yes. Food is fuel and you can use it as a tool. So I always recommend starting with that first before doing anything else.
Are there signs, getting back to protein, are there signs that a child might not be getting enough protein?
Yeah, so if a child is not getting enough protein, likely they're not building more muscle. They might show a little bit more weakness. It depends on their state, maybe prior to doing the sport as well. If they were already smaller and you notice they're not growing, I mean, that would be a definite sign that they're not getting enough protein. There's definitely more severe cases, but it would be outside of the realm of like the athletic world.
So you're starting to bring up some red flags. Can you explain what REDS is, relative energy deficiency in sports, and how it can show up in kids and teens?
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite topics. I love talking about it because it's not, I don't think it's talked about enough, especially in the sports. REDS is a condition of sorts where there's many people who have studied and they look at the correlation between energy that you're taking in through food and your development and growth, for example, with females, with your menstrual cycle and whether you have one or not have one, and then also with bone density and your bone health. And it's that whole relationship. So one thing affects the other. And so there's a chance, a much higher percentage in athletes, of course, to having all these issues, which can lead to poor development and growth and injury, especially lack of energy, poor performance. And so it's really important that this topic is talked about and coaches are using tools to assess for these issues with these patients. So that way they can pull the students back and kind of look at it and say, okay, maybe you need to sit down and work on your health first. So there's definitely red flags that pop up.
One area parents often struggle with is knowing when sports participation is becoming harmful. When should parents be concerned about weight loss in their child, whether it's intentional or unintentional, and consider pulling them out of their sport to protect their health?
Yeah, so the funny thing about sports is a lot of times this is a part of their culture, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they have like a full-blown eating disorder either. A lot of times it's being pushed even by the coaches or the parents even sometimes, and they're just like working hard. So it can often be missed. But if parents are aware of this in the first place, they'll be able to see if their child is at risk, because not only will weight loss be part of it, that's probably number one, but they would notice other things like their child is more fatigued. They don't perform as well if they're having more injuries, if they're getting sick more often. Once again, the missing period is another big one.
This is a time when we see the emergence of eating disorders like anorexia and bulimia. Is there a connection between REDS and eating disorders?
Yeah, there's absolutely a connection to it. The thing about REDS, like I mentioned before, you can have REDS without an eating disorder, but you can have an eating disorder with REDS. And that's one thing that I think we have to take into consideration, is what the child is experiencing a part of the culture and not necessarily body image related, or is it body image related? Because if it is body image related, which often happens, then there's definitely more serious consequences that could happen down the line.
Can you help parents understand that distinction and what to actually look out for?
Yes. So there's different types of eating disorders out there. So it really depends on certain symptoms. And with the help of a therapist, they can diagnose properly what type of eating disorder that it can be. But certain things that you would look for is you know, especially with like anorexia and bulimia, or even binge eating would be one. The newest one that's out there, orthorexia, is also when a child is obsessed, or an individual for that matter, is obsessed with eating healthy as well, which could also be easily missed as a good diet. So oftentimes they're praised. So that one, that's one sign, as well as doing things like body checking. Are they looking in the mirror? Are they, you know, check what they're scrolling on their TikToks or social media. What are they looking at? Who are the friends around them? Are they checking their weight constantly? Are they wearing baggy clothing? Are they stuck in the bathroom for long periods of time? Extra workout and weird times during the day. So a lot of components that go into discovering if there's a true eating disorder, for sure.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that and the specific signs to be looking for. What are some practical tips for parents, including a few simple things families can do at home to develop a positive relationship with food?
Simple things that you can do is just create an atmosphere where food is good and there's no guilt that is based behind it. It's really horrible when I hear and see parents and they're like, oh, you can't have that cake. You have a show later, or even a coach or anybody like that. And it takes away the fun of that moment. But with mindfulness and moderation, a child should be able to indulge in what they like, but also have a healthy diet all at the same time. Certain things I love parents to do is maybe cook meals together, go grocery shopping together, taking, you know, devices away and eating at the dinner table together. You're creating a relationship, like, with, you're bonding with your family, but also food is involved in that. So you have good memories associated with the food that you're eating.
Those are great tips. And you're clearly passionate about this. How did you become interested in focusing on nutrition for young athletes, especially dancers and other high intensity sports?
So I was a dancer ever since I was 4 years old. My first career path was actually, I wanted to be a belly dancer. I went to college for quite some time and I experienced a lot of confusion when it came to food. I grew up with a really, I would say, healthy relationship with food. My parents always had great things surrounded behind it. And I experienced more of a world of binge eating later in my life whenever I wanted to feel better. And I realized I didn't use food as the tool that I needed to use it as. And it was more of a coping mechanism. And it just all surrounded around having a lack of information, a lack of education. So whenever I stepped away from wanting to have that career, I was like, what am I going to do? And I got inspired by meeting another dietitian, and I noticed this gap. And I was like, I have to help dancers so they don't wind up like me.
So how do you talk to people about the pressures that often go along with ballet dancing?
It comes from the heart, from my heart, honestly. And I try to be as vulnerable as possible, especially when I'm talking to a teenager, where sometimes the walls are really hard to break down. And usually it helps them open up a little bit more. And I think my perspective of actually being in that role and being a dancer, they realize that it's such a unique world compared to some other sports that I can be trusted in that sense where, like, oh, she gets it. So I do hope they feel that way.
I was just thinking that they can relate to you because they know that you do have that perspective. What are some of the best ways for everyone to feel comfortable in their own skin?
Oh, I think it's taking time to reflect on yourself. When it's surrounding food, I have clients of all types, not just athletes. I'll ask them to sometimes journal what they're feeling, and then we'll talk about it so we know how to kind of navigate those feelings. Maybe we need to create an anchor that's not surrounded by emotional eating, and instead we're meditating or journaling or doing something along those lines. It's really about building that positive relationship, not with food, but with yourself too, and realizing it's okay to make mistakes. You don't have to feel guilty. Removing that guilt that you have, kind of finding the reasons why you might have that guilt and, like, working through it.
I love that. If you could leave our listeners with one key message about sports nutrition for kids and teens, what would it be?
One key message for sport nutrition for me would be to get education from a source that is data backed, and know that food is a tool for fuel, but it's also a relationship that needs to be built to create memories and culture and association with some other great things in life.
Thank you, Mara, for sharing your expertise and compassion with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you to our listeners for joining us. Remember, the goal isn't perfection. It's supporting our kids as they grow, move, and enjoy the sports they love in healthy ways. We'll include links to Maura's work and additional resources about fueling young athletes in the show notes. Until next time, I'm Dr. Sarah, and let's grow up together.
Produced by Autovita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.